Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is one of the most infamous athletes in Chicago history. After a successful rookie season for the Chicago Bulls, Jay Williams was on the rise. In a great offseason, he was getting ready to turn into the NBA star that everybody wanted. And then, tragedy. We all remember it. Williams was involved in a terrible motorcycle accident that destroyed his career. Williams spent most of his adult life rehabbing and healing from his injuries. In that harrowing time, Jay Williams learned life lessons. What kind of adult would he be without basketball? What was his life going to look like? Today, Jay Williams is a basketball analyst for ESPN and an author. The new book is called Life is Not an Accident, a memoir of reinvention. And that is the best way for this book to be titled, Jay. This is a, I mean, it really is. And welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming in and talking. But it really is. I mean, this is a memoir of reinvention.
You know, it's funny. You know, I have a series of tattoos on me, and whenever I meet people, they think I'm this clean cut Duke altar boy. And I didn't get any tattoos after my accident, and I've been dying to get one more because I feel like my life has really resonated. It's like a phoenix, right? And when I hear people talk about my accident, you know, they use the word tragedy or they use the word downfall, and for me, I feel like it was almost a rebirth. Because the path I was going down as an individual at the age of 21 years old
right.
was, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people associate success with money. And I try to tell people all the time, look, just because you have millions of dollars, it doesn't make you mature or it doesn't make you a good person. So for me, at that given time at 21, going down this path where nobody on my crew told me no, everybody was telling me yes because people were afraid to lose me as a client. And your reality becomes warped.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy for me to see athletes or people who are deemed, I'm doing air quotes right now, successful, become aloof or standoffish or isolated. Because a lot of people who have been in your life all of a sudden want something or they want to build something. So, you know, you kind of corner yourself. And it's easy to lose perspective on what's real and what's not when you're so alone.
In your life, I mean, you... Even being, you know, making a move to be one of the biggest NBA stars at the time, I mean, it has a lot to do with fearlessness. I mean, it has to do with your, you know, jump into new heights. And for you, that was a big part of your life. I mean, you talked about in the book your relationship with the motorcycle, the idea of being on I-90 or Lakeshore Drive, zooming down. Like, I mean, it was a lot of fearlessness.
Well, having the motorcycle really reminded me of who I was on the court. And I had lost perspective on who I was on the court for that year because it was different than what I came from. And look, once again, this is not a pity party. You know, it's not one of these books where I'm saying, hey, woe is me. Everybody has their stuff that they've gone through in life, right? And it's about picking yourself back up. But it took me all but a year to become a shell of the person I was when I was in college. And it was the bike, also the people I was riding with, there was a sense of camaraderie that I had at college. Look, playing at Duke was a blessing and a curse, right? It was a blessing for the fact that I played for this amazing Hall of Fame coach that taught us the importance of being together, being a band of brothers, okay? If you had fallen down on the court, we were on the same team in college, mm-hmm. I would have been the first person to run over right next to you.
That's how you were taught.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hand out. Let me help you up. I got you. I have your back. If you got in a fight, I don't even know the reason why you're in a fight, but I'm backing you up. You come to the league, and this is where Duke can be a curse a little bit, come to a team like this.
It's a young team. I mean, the super young, 23, 22-year-old median age.
Everybody's out for themselves. You know, people are more concerned with after a game, you know, whether it says a W or L in that column about winning or losing. Let me see the stat sheet. Let me see the stat sheet, and let me recognize, you know, what my stats are because I have to get paid. And also, the leader of our team was somebody who held a little bit of animosity towards me. And Jalen Rose, you know, first of all, he got traded from Indiana. He didn't want to leave Indiana. Mm-hmm. He was angry at Isaiah Thomas. He was angry at Donnie Walsh. You know, we've talked about that now.
Right.
And also, you know, our first game that really set the tone for my entire year was we won the game.
I remember against the Celtics.
Yeah, I had some bad free throws down the stretch. And I wake up the next morning in my apartment only a few blocks away from here, okay? And you're reading the paper, and I'm like, wait a second. My teammate is calling me a choke artist after we just won this game? Wow, okay.
Welcome to the NBA, right?
Welcome to the league. some dissension there. So
well, yeah, I mean, you were the number two overall pick. You were coming to Chicago, which had seen better days. No doubt about it.
A lot better days. Yep.
Yeah, the 5 years preceding were not good for the Bulls after Jordan left. I mean, there was a lot of expectation on your shoulder. I mean, they were like, Jay Williams will fix it. So there was some animosity, from some of the other players that were afraid they were going to lose minutes, they were going to lose their standing, things like that.
Well, there was a lot of stuff that accumulated over those months, too. It was not only the dissension between Jalen Rose and I, and then me not really trusting him from that moment on, because I would see him be a politician in a lot of different ways, right? Like say one thing to somebody else and then, you know, say something behind my back, but then shake my hand and smile at me. I'm like, oh, this dude right here. And then there was Jamal, you know, and Jamal Crawford is a beast. Right. Obviously, he's still a beast right now. But we were pitted against each other, right? And you laugh at that because you're like, you're telling me that Jamal Crawford and I couldn't play in the same backcourt? You know, we did that the last 14, 15 games where it was Jamal, myself, and Jalen. But also you're running the triangle. We're running the triangle, which is a system built for a wing player like Kobe and Jordan. Those are the only two systems where Kobe and Jordan have been able to make successful.
Right. You guys are much more open, run.
Yeah, and we're playing a triangle through Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry, who were 19 years old at the time. Like, no offense. I mean, it is what it is. So, look, that year was a year full of ups and downs, and it was a complete dichotomy of what I just came from at Duke University.
Let's take a break. And we come back, let's talk about the beginning of the next year, because that's, in a way, that's where your life started.
Yeah.
You know, Jay Williams is my guest tonight. His new book, Life is Not an Accident, A Memoir of Reinvention. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My guest tonight, Jay Williams. As I said at the beginning, one of the most infamous athletes in Chicago history. Pete and I were talking beforehand about a lot of different athletes have had, you know, off the court, off the field issues. You've had some that have been hated on the field and been bounced out of town. You think of a lot of Chicago Cubs, you know. but you're this athlete that everybody knows. And I know that in the book that you deal with a lot of the sort of, and we'll get to this, about the fears of coming back or letting down the fan base. But both Pete and I were like, you know what, I don't know if as fans of the Chicago Bulls that we were let down. I think more than anything, I mean, it was really sad. It was a sad moment for Chicago. We don't want to see anybody get hurt. And let's go back to that, because this book is really about you. And I don't know the best way to say it, getting this off your chest. This story is so specific, but it's about detailing very specific things about the accident and about the rehab. Talk about the accident, because, you know, we know a lot of it because the news was out at the time, but this was an intense experience for you, obviously, for anybody who had been in this situation.
Yeah, well, the book is about finding out who you want to be. And, you know, obviously perspective is everything. And the perspective of who I thought I wanted to be at the age of 21 is completely different than the perspective on who I want to be now at the age of 34. And, you know, to bring you back to the accident day, I just worked out in North Carolina. I went back and I was playing at a camp that day against J.J. Redick the night before, and had one of these days where, you know, after the season was over, man, and you talk about me being fearless. It was even funny last night talking to Mark Jackson. You know, he was asking me, you know, who would I compare myself to? And I was like, well, look, I'm not saying I'm anywhere close to this guy, because this guy is one of the all-time greats, but I think I'm a little bit psychotic in how competitive I am. Right. So when people can't relate to Kobe Bryant, I'm like, oh, no, I can see that, because even me as a broadcaster, like, it took me a long time to get better. But I want to be better. Mm-hmm. And whenever somebody tells me I can't do something, oh, please, thank you. Because now you're adding gasoline to the fire that already
existed within
my soul.
That was a big motivation for you, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
who
I am.
The whole summer and everything about it. You were ready to take the next. You were playing against, like you said, the scrimmages with Redick, but even everyone was saying, "Man, your game is wow. You're ready to go."
Yeah, and I was still 21 years old at the time. I was still partying a little bit, so you know, I partied that night after scrimmaging JJ, and I'd take a flight at the early crack of dawn the next morning, and came back, took a nap. Went to the Berto Center, worked out, and it was all of a sudden playing against Jamal Crawford and all these other guys. And I was like, my game is – I'm starting to feel like who I was back when I was National Player of the Year in college. I was able to get where I wanted on the court when I wanted to go there. I finally understood that I don't need to be everybody's friend here. I need to stay my tail in the gym, outwork people, and really set the tone for who I want to be as a player.
And be a leader on this team.
Exactly. Right. And trying to take the steps to do that. So then I went back home to my apartment downtown Chicago, took another nap, and I had a meeting with my agent that day, a couple miles away. And it was such a great day. First off, as a fan of Chicago winters were, as we all know, pretty brutal, with the exception of maybe this winter, right? And I was barely outside, and I didn't want to take my Tahoe that day. I had a Corvette because I had a deal with that company. I didn't want to take that because I felt like an older man driving that car. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to take my bike. And it was a byproduct of who I was at that given time, right? Mm-hmm. The ego was a little bit out of control. And I took my bike, got to the meeting fine, had a great meeting. As I was walking out of the meeting, my agent, Kevin Bradbury, who's still an agent to this day, I was like, dude, what are you doing riding that bike? I was like, Kevin, I shouldn't be doing a lot of things. And I got on the bike and started to ride away. And I revved the engine the first time. And then I revved it the second time, louder than the first. And then, you know, on the third rev, I had no helmet on, no protective gear. I had a new muffler. And that, for some reason, I had to rev my engine a lot louder because being on a billboard on I-90 wasn't big enough for my ego. And I revved it louder the third time, and in the middle of the rev, I just heard the bike go click, click. And out of nowhere, I popped the wheelie, and I wish my reaction would have been to let go of the bike. But it very much tapped into my mentality at that time, is that I wanted to control every aspect of my life. I think a lot of people do this, okay? I want to control, you know, if I get that raise. I want to control, you know, my work ethic or where I can be here. And I grabbed onto the bike to try to wrestle it down to the ground. And when I grabbed onto it, I guess my squeeze, my grip from my right hand pulled back the throttle even more. And when I did that, the bike, the bottom wheel spun out. And when it spun out, all of a sudden I angled off. And I just, next thing you know, I look up and I'm going 70 miles per hour and I smack right into a utility pole. And I try to turn the bike at the last second and eclipse the whole left side of my body. And I'm spinning parallel to the ground. And when I land, my chest is up on the grassy knoll area between the sidewalk and the curb. My navel's pressed up against the curb, and my legs are laying on the street as if I'm laying on my side. And it's the most gnarly feeling to have your hands touch your legs and your legs not be able to feel your hands touch you.
And you knew at that time. You talk about it in the book that what you were going through your head, you're like, this is not just I broke my leg.
Yeah, well, I couldn't feel my legs, you know, my hands touching my legs. And then you're looking at your hands ready to see blood, and you don't see any blood. And you're like, but I feel like I'm bleeding somewhere and I can't find it. But instead of thinking about, you know, I don't want to die, you know, I'm going to throw my life away, I started pounding my hand on the ground, just pounding, 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 saying I threw it all away. I threw it all away. I felt it. My soul at that given moment felt that I had just made this horrific mistake that would follow me for the rest of my life.
I have to ask, you know, is it hard to be on the book tour, to tell this story over and over and over? I mean, obviously you've gone through a lot, and writing the book is very cathartic in the way that you're telling your story and you talk about that at the end. But is it hard to tell me, a complete stranger, or tell Pete in the room, just to recount that story over and over?
No, you know why? Because it's a small story that's a piece of the bigger story. It's a story that doesn't define me, and I embrace it. It's a part of my journey. It's a part of my road. And you know, I was telling you guys before we went on air, you know, since this book has came out, I've been receiving letters from across the world from people that have tried to explain to me their own accident. Prime example, I had a father the other day that said he's been drinking a lot and that, you know, he almost hit his son. And he's like, you know, I don't want to be the father that, you know, your father was when he beat up your mom. And I said, well, look, my dad's a great man, right? And my dad has mistakes that he made in the past, the same way that I have mistakes that I made in the past. That's not who my father is now. My father recognizes that mistake, and he's trying to be better for it. And you have the same opportunity to be better for it, but you have to recognize it first. And for so long, I pushed and shunned my pain away. I forced myself to not remember what I had done. And writing this book has been very cathartic for me, and I think it's a process that a lot of people should try to go through, just not a book, just to kind of relinquish this anger that I held at myself, because I wasn't the same person I am now, but I learned to trust in the struggle, and there's a process for everything.
Talking with Jay Williams, his new book, Life is Not an Accident, A Memoir of Reinvention. Let's take a break for the news. When we come back, let's talk about the rehab.
Okay.
Because, you know, a lot of the fans, you know, Bulls fans or people knew this story, were like, oh, you know, and then maybe they look past the person.
Everybody went on with their lives.
Either went on with their lives or said, oh, what are we going to do? We lost our point guard. For you, this was years of rehab. And you documented in the book.
And mental torture, too, when you watch Kirk Heinrich get drafted in your hospital bed in ICU.
Jay Williams, my guest tonight on The Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Jay Williams, former Chicago Bull, and he's got a new book out, Life is Not an Accident, A Memoir of Reinvention. And when we left the conversation, we left it with the accident, which, like I said, the fans were aghast. Everyone was, oh, my, what happened? Oh, he's out.
They weren't the only ones.
Right.
Right.
And then they said, oh, and as you said, as we were going to break, they said, oh, well, now we're going to have to draft a point guard. And they drafted Kurt Heinrich. And besides the story once in a while that you were making a comeback or, you know, that the Bulls were going to honor the contract, I mean, it almost was like the fandom were fans of basketball and they moved on. But in your case, you did years of rehab, and not just physical rehab, mental rehab, psychological. Mm. You had your own battle with drugs and prescription pills. And I mean, there's so much in this story that as a fan and a fan of yours coming out of college, I didn't know about. Mm. Let's talk about the rehab because you spent...
That
you
word were, still you makes were, me cringe, by the way.
You were bedridden. I mean, you could not move for months.
Mm-hmm. Imagine... You know, I think we've all had these dreams before where you go into one of these deep, REM-y sleeps, right? And you wake up and you had that dream where you were about to die or something was about to happen. You wake up, you're like, oh, my God, I am so happy that was just a dream. And for me, when I woke up the next day, you can't imagine how it is to have a tube down your throat and you see three metal pins inserted into the bone of your left leg, holding your leg up, hovering in the air. And, you know, a bar on top of the three pins that's connecting them up top, just kind of holding them up in a gurney. And then two metal pins inserted into your pelvis area. And you're like, what the hell? Like, what happened? Like, what just happened? Is this has to be a dream, right?
Right.
Like, this can't be real.
Right.
And then obviously the doctor coming in and, you know, the first question I asked her was, will I be able to play again? Right. Once again, on my head. You know, I'm thinking about what I just threw away. I'm thinking, will I be able to come back from this?
You
bad
weren't
decision?
Concerned about whether I'm going to walk again,
no
whether
way.
It's going to affect my life in general.
Didn't even occur to me. I'm just, you know, will I be able to play again? And you know, she didn't really know what to say.
Right.
And the look she gave me was crippling within itself. Yeah, man. So you know, you talk about the injuries, complete dislocation of my left knee, which means I tore every ligament in my left knee. I tore my peroneal nerve in my left leg, which allows you to pull your foot up and down. Look, all those injuries were horrific, and it took years and years of physical therapy to learn how to walk again. But none of it compared to the mental agony and torture that I went through and went through for a long time afterwards. None of it did.
And it's well documented in the book, but you talk about that being from the feeling of letting down the people that are close to you, your family, loved ones, people who were making money or
was a chance for my family
careers.
To create a legacy, right.
Right?
I mean,
there's that. There's the city of Chicago, which we'll get into. But then there's also like just the concept of you know, there's a great scene where you have to go, you know, first day of like public rehab where you have to go and people are seeing you and the way that people were treating you, the way that people were, it was almost like a pity or a pity party every time they saw Jay Williams. And that's not how you came up.
Yeah, well, as an athlete, and look, I never thought of myself as a superior athlete, right? For me, you become the second pick in the draft, and it's a whirlwind because I've always been that kid that was deemed not good enough, right? And for me, like that's why I still relate to this day. I always think of myself as not good enough so I can always work harder, right? So you never recognize some of the things you're actually good at doing. But the one thing I did recognize was the way people looked at me while I was a player. And it was more of like, wow, I hope one day I can accomplish what he was able to accomplish.
What a role model.
Yeah,
Williams,
he graduated school early. Right, you know, he did it by the book. And even when I would bring kids on the court at the United Center, you know, before a game, seeing them shoot around and seeing the way they would look at me was this look of awe. And how that look quickly changed to a look of, oh, I can't believe this guy just threw away it all. Or I would put myself in people's minds, even when they didn't say anything. And would say the same thing that I knew they were saying. What a moron. What an idiot. He just screwed it all up. I mean, for what, a bike? What an idiot. Like, those are all things people say every single day, right, when they hear people, you know. And I stop myself from doing that now. But that was mental pain, man. And, you know, look, I have my nerve, when a nerve regenerates, It takes an inch per month for the nerve to regenerate, okay? I had over 2 feet of nerve that needed to regenerate. So when a nerve regenerates, it feels as if your leg is on fire 24/7. So it's a pain that you can't control when it happens. So I could be having a conversation with you right now if this was, you know, 13 years ago, and be talking fine, and all of a sudden I'd start screaming hysterically because it felt like somebody was taking a dull knife and just stabbing me continuously in the leg. So in order to numb that pain, I had to take Oxycontin 3.5-4 times a day. 3.5-4 times a day, Oxycontin. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever taken prescription medication like that before, but it makes you feel like you're in a dream state scenario. I mean, you are in
3 or 4 times a day.
You are just, right. You're not even walking. Well, I couldn't walk at the time. I'm just hovering. I'm floating in air. Okay. Everything seems so warped and just not real. And as you keep doing that, that took a long time and that became my reality. And even while I was trying to come back, once I couldn't come back, I went down to the D League. I got cut by the Nets, and I watched, you know, my head coach Dennis Johnson. After I got hurt again, I was in the hospital playing for the D League, the Austin Toros, and I had to go back to Duke for more therapy. I felt like the one last guy who believed in me, Dennis Johnson, who was obviously a great guard for the Boston Celtics. You know, he dies of a heart attack the next day, and it's one of those things where you're like, I can't deal with that pain anymore. And the most difficult thing about it was that there's still not a day that goes by in my life where people don't remind me of the biggest mistake I made. People do it. A guy did it today. So I landed at Chicago O'Hare Airport, and there was a guy who was trying to recognize who I was, and he knew my face from TV, and he was pointing towards me. He's like, you're that guy. Yeah, you threw away your career, right? Like, you got in that wreck. How are you? And people are saying it not maliciously, but it's just their way of trying to connect with you in that given moment. And for him,
they're desensitized to it. You're a number and a stat on a sheet, and they're like, "Oh, you, the guy who threw away his career."
Yeah. So for him, he's like ready to have this full blown conversation. Right. And me, 13 years ago, I'm like, "What do you mean? What do you mean?" Like, I would have been angry or not even know how to have a conversation with that guy.
Right.
And now, where I'm able, obviously, to spin it, I'm like, oh, "Yeah, I am, bro, but I'm doing bigger and better things," you know. But that would send me even to a deeper, darker spiral, and that's what led me to be addicted to Oxycontin for a long time.
You know. All, you hear that story a lot, especially when people with life-changing injuries and things. But for you, you know, and you write about it in this book, and it really comes down to this fear of failure. And you're in a position where you've battled back. You've battled back with your rehabs. You were worrying if you're ever going to walk again. And you have to go right back into the competitive nature of the NBA. You have to go to, you know, your training, you're trying out for teams saying, too slow, Jay Williams, next year. You know, like, I mean, you're right back in it. And not to mention what you just mentioned, them people coming up to you and talking to you. But it was about, I mean, you have this really, really complex relationship with failure.
I do. Well, it just tries to describe the complexity of identity. And, you know, I even talk about, you know, where I was raised. It was, you know, I grew up in a predominantly African-American and Latin town, and where I went to school at was predominantly Caucasian. And when I would go to school and hang out with my friends there and, you know, I dress a certain way, like, oh, you're so black, you're so hood. And I'm like, okay. And then when I would go to my friends in my hometown, they're like, oh, you're so white, you're so nerdy, you're such a geek. I'm like, well, wait a second, am I white? Am I black? What am I? And do I have to be a certain way? Like, if I'm articulate and I speak properly, does that mean I'm white? Or am I still black and can I be that? And I think it's this issue that we all have our stuff. Everybody has had some kind of accident. And, you know, how do you bounce back from it? And how do you recognize? I try to say, for so long after my accident, I was chasing this damn ghost. I was trying to be this person who I was pre-accident. And sometimes when you're climbing a mountain, you're so fixated on staring at the top of the mountain and waiting to, you know, conquer this massive beast, that you never take a second to stop and to look back and say, whoa, I just done all this.
Mm-hmm.
That finally happened for me through writing this book. I was like, wait a second. Like, you know, it hit this point in my life after my second attempt at suicide where it's like, whoa, like, I don't need to be this person anymore. I don't need to be this person that needed the attention, that needed all these things to validate who I was as a man. And as you guys both know, as young men, like, you're taught not to show any vulnerability, right? Like, even from the time you're taught that way since you're a little boy, like, when little boys fall, get up, you're fine, you're fine. Don't cry. That's not being a man. And for me, I was like, wait a second. Like, this is who I am. Like, I have pain associated with me. Like, it's okay. And I need to find a way to move past this. And I recognize all the feats I was able to accomplish. Like, I learned how to walk again. I learned how to run again. I came all the way back and I played on NBA court, even to where I was able to bust Jason Kidd up a couple of days in practice. You know what I mean? And maybe I wasn't the player I was before, but also I need to stop reminding myself of who I was before, because I wasn't that person anymore. And to stop letting people remind me of that person, because I was different and I was better for it.
Let's talk about the word recognition. Recognizing that, you know, that you had to become a different person, that you had to stop chasing a dream, or that you had to put was in the past. I forgot how you said it, but put in the past, you know, you had to look forward instead of keep looking back. Plus the idea, I mean, it's a complex word for you, because recognition, like what just happened to you at the airport. You know, people recognize you and they have sort of these predisposed judgment. Talk about recognition, because that's a big theme in this book as well.
Well, for me, recognition has changed. I think earlier I would have loved to have had recognition for what I was able to accomplish on the court, because unfortunately for me, that was my identity, right? I identified myself with being a Chicago Bull and being a second pick in a draft and being able to do something that, you know, less than 0.01% of the people in the world were able to accomplish. And as the recognition process has changed for me over the years, though, because now I want to be recognized for how I've been able to fight back, but also the recognize that the journey is still going. And, you know, the one thing that I am so happy about is that I do come from an educational background. You know, it's always been imperative for me to try to do well at school, right? And it's not one of those things like, oh, make sure you take school seriously, because you always should. But, you know, I felt so slighted because I went to find this legacy that I thought basketball could provide. And now it's like, you know, my goals have changed. I kind of found a way to do TV. And, you know, somebody wrote to me the other day on Twitter, come on, Jay, the only reason you're on TV is because you were good at basketball. I'm like, you're right. Like, I own that. But that didn't stop me from working hard to be good at doing television. That didn't stop me from taking courses for years plus on how to read off a teleprompter and how to be better at it, or how to be more conversational with, you know, my other analysts, or how to deal with debating the right way and not taking it personally. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, doing TV for ESPN, I love it. And it's just not where I don't want to spend the next 40 years of my life just being an analyst. Like, I'm going to be a host. I'm going to find a way to have my own show. I'm going to find a way to be on morning television. There are things I aspire to intellectually that I don't need to rely upon my physical skills to do for me anymore. And that's been a process, man.
All right. Here's a hard question. Chicago.
Yep.
You know, you talk a lot in the book about there. I believe you start one chapter where you say, you know, I feel like I let down the whole city. You know, you talk about
the city that I crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk about that. I mean, it's been years now. What's your relationship like with Chicago? And I mean, you're sitting in, you like you said, you're blocks away from where you lived, you know, like where you were when you were Chicago Bull.
For a long time, it was a sad relationship. It was one where I had no idea how to deal with it. Now it's great. I mean, I love this city. Look, I'm from New Jersey, New York. I love New York, and I spend a lot of time in California too. But, you know, whenever I get a chance to come back here, I'm like, oh man, I miss this city so damn much. This city is the best city in the country. But for a long time, you know, when I had to come back here to do rehab, I didn't want to face people after that. And I knew people were angry at me. Look, fans are fans, right? Fan is short for fanatical, right? So I understand how passionate fans are about their sport. And obviously, you know, all these different social media mediums, you know, give you insight into how fans think. I don't know how I would have been able to handle Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff if that was part of when my accident happened, because I had a hard time dealing with it afterwards. And I have had fans say nasty stuff to me. You know, it didn't matter what I said on air. I could say that, you know, Jabari Parker is the next coming of, you know, Jordan for Duke. And somebody would be like, shut up, man. You have no right to talk about the Bulls, or you have no right to make any comment about this, because, you know, you screwed our organization. We wasted money on you. You're a waste of life. You're like, wow, okay, tell me how you really feel. And I had to recognize that, you know, fans saw me as that person for the city, and I saw myself as that person. That's who I wanted to be. And I think it's worked out pretty well. I mean, with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, obviously what they're able to do, but that took me a long time to work through. And almost in a way, I went through this really difficult time where I was trying to talk people through my accident. Imagine that, right? Like, when I was here and when I was working out with Tim Grover and I was I talk about this in my book, you know, D. Wade and, you know, Quentin Richardson were here, and these guys were working out, Corey Maggette, and we would go out and be out, and some people were like, oh, man, I can't, you really hurt me. And people would say, you really hurt me when you got hurt. And I would say, I'm sorry. Like, you know, I know I hurt you, and I apologize, and I was bad. And I would walk away after the conversation and be like, did I really just apologize to this dude for something I did to myself? You know, because I'm a nice person. And I was like, well, I think I need to learn how to forgive myself before, you know, I can apologize to anybody else. But, you know, I also think, dude, that writing this book, like, that was my way of apologizing. Look, I understand the responsibilities that came along with being the second pick in the draft and taking Jordan's locker and having that competitive spirit. But I had to learn how to forgive myself before I could apologize to anybody else.
It's a great read. It's wonderful. As a Bulls fan and as someone who's a Jay Williams supporter, this is a tremendous achievement. The book is called Life is Not an Accident, A Memoir of Reinvention. The author is Jay Williams. Jay, thanks for coming back, and thanks for talking to us tonight on The Download.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.